Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fairley, and we are here with...
Peter Gajewski.
Who will be conducting the National Philharmonic September 29th at 8 p.m., part of the Leonard Bernstein Centennial over at Strathmore. And I'm really jacked for this because, you know me, I was a movie guy. They're doing the score, Leonard Bernstein score for On the Waterfront, Best Picture 1954. Thank you so much for coming in. I'm so excited for this event. And the movie itself is great. You know, we get Marlon Brando, could have been a contender. You know, I think Ava Marie Saint's debut before North by Northwest and all those other great movies she did. Carl Malden, Lee J. Cobb. It just goes on and on. It's a great flick. I was going to say, remind us what the movie's about, or do you want me to take that?
Of course. I've been watching it and watching it. I've probably now seen it, I'm guessing, between 20 and 30 times and moving up, because what my job will be to do the music live as the picture is being shown. So I have to be intimately familiar exactly how it fits in. But yes, the story, I don't know, maybe you better do it, but it's about longshoremen in Hoboken, New Jersey, and it's about corruption, and there's a little bit of a love story in there. Anyway.
Yeah, Brando's a former boxer who's now working on the, let's say, the corrupt union docs, I guess.
Exactly.
Lee J. Cobb is sort of the corrupt union leader, and he fights, you know.
Except Brando's the guy with a conscience.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. And then there's the great scene where, you know, it was you, Charlie. It was you. But he's talking to his brother where he feels like he always could have been a contender and could have been made it, but instead he had to take dives for the, you know, throw fights for the short end money.
So exactly.
We've seen that echoed through, you know, Raging Bull. And even when I listen back to the Rocky score, I hear some of those horns that I think are harkening back to Bernstein here. Well, all right. Well, I could talk the movie all day, but let's go into what your bread and butter, the music for this. So, like you said, you've been hearing this in and out. What stands out to you, and why? I mean, Bernstein went on to do West Side Story and so all this other stuff, but why was this a seminal score? What stands out about it to you?
Well, it was his first crack at films, and he actually never went back to films. This is the only film he scored,
wow,
other than, you know, music for musicals.
That's right, they took his Broadway shows for West Side Story.
That's right, exactly.
Him, yeah.
So it's the only film he scored. It was his first crack at it, so he was coming to it completely fresh. And he was an innovator. So rather than doing some of the standard stuff, like starting like with a big orchestral thing, he just starts the score with a single instrument playing, you know, as the first pictures are shown, kind of evoking the loneliness of the whole thing. And the instrument is a horn, and so the nobility of the whole thing. And then he also uses percussion. Just kind of in percussive riffs to evoke, you know, he picks it up, and the first scene, I mean, don't want to give away the film, although everyone knows, but there's some nastiness that happens really early on, and
I want to know who killed my brother.
Yeah, exactly. So he actually uses two sets of timpani, and you know, you can, when you do it live, you can set them apart, so you kind of hear it a little bit from different directions, and there's an interplay. It's really kind of very innovative for the time, and very interesting, and doing this, you know, music live to film, which is what we're doing. It's kind of interesting for the audience because you get to see like, so this is how it's done.
Right.
And then he uses saxophones, to kind of evoke the time and the place. So it's very, very interesting score.
I love what you're saying about how it starts with that isolated horn where I'm trying to remember. I think it's like...
That comes in a little later. No. The opening, da da.
Oh yeah.
Da 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 da.
Yeah. Oh man, that's just taking me back. And then the percussion comes in, and it's like,
it gets really wild up until the moment, you know, somebody falls off the roof, and then it's suddenly silence, and all of a sudden, the story begins to unfold.
And silence can be, you know, just as powerful in those moments.
Exactly.
The absence of music after we've ramped that up, and then you're like, oh my God. Awesome. And then, of course, from the movie side, this was Elia Kazan, too, the great director.
Right.
He had worked with Brando 3 years earlier in his first movie, Streetcar Named Desire, which they'd brought over from the stage. And that was sort of the influx of the method acting was when that started to come. Yeah. And then they reunite here for this. And there's just all these little great touches.
It's a huge backstory. I mean, they had to convince Brando to take the part. Yeah. And it was quite a story.
I just love those little exchanges with him and Ava Marie saying on the rooftop with like the pet pigeons.
You know, they considered Elizabeth Montgomery for that part.
Really?
Yeah, so it was between the two of them, and they kind of found her to be a little bit like too straight.
That's funny.
And and then of course Frank Sinatra was considered for the priest role. Well, not considered, he wanted it.
Wow.
And they gave it to Carl Malden before he got involved, and he originally wanted the principal role, but then that went away, and then he wanted the priest role. There's all kinds of very interesting people involved in this whole thing.
Isn't it crazy? Like, and now I can't imagine the movie with anyone other than Carl Malden.
Right. And originally Arthur Miller wrote the very first version of the script.
The script. Wow. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy.
Like, if you look back and you're like, all right, Elia Kazan, Arthur Miller, Marlon Brando, it's like all these crazy, and Leonard Bernstein, all these. These are like the titans of all the different crafts.
And it's like, it was one of those films that year, I think, that they knew this was going to be the film of the year before they ever made it.
Right.
And sure enough, it wins 8 Academy Awards, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actress, Best Screenplay. I mean, all the big ones.
And what's crazy is they do all that the year of Rear Window. So he beats Hitchcock for Best Director, which, like, think about the achievement of that. Rear Window is a masterpiece on its own.
Right.
And so now, I mean, movie is unbelievable.
Who was it that was in Great Window that was also considered for this? And she chose, who's in Great Window?
You mean Rear Window?
Rear Window.
Oh, Grace Kelly.
Grace Kelly was also considered for this part. And then, but she decided to do Rear Window instead of this picture.
Well, I can't fault her because I love Rear Window too. I mean, with the Oscars, it's like it could be either way. But the point being is, On the Waterfront is just—it's a masterpiece. And if you haven't seen it, if you've gotten this far into the interview and you haven't seen it, hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hit play again and listen to that.
It's AFI like 19th best movie ever.
Yeah,
and actually the
it was in the top 10 the first time AFI did it, and then it dropped a few slots when they redid it. But it'll always hang around in the top movies ever.
And the score also is like in the top teens. So anyway.
Yeah, because you're right. AFI would do every year for a while there. They would do best, you know, scores, best whatever. And this was in their top one too. And so this was the only time. Why do you think this was the only time Bernstein did it directly for a movie? Like, did he just... He was like, I can't top this?
What I'm thinking is he actually got frustrated by the experience. Because for a composer of that stature, you know, you're really subservient to the director.
And the studio.
And the studios. Yeah. And you know, and you have the lengths, and they tell you, and they make you make cuts that you don't want to make.
Yeah.
His career moved forward, and then he didn't look back.
Yeah.
But, you know, but so great that they got him this early, because at least we have this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, if you're one and done on anything, we'll take On the Waterfront.
Right.
Speaking of Bernstein, I know you studied with him back in, like, the 80s, right? Tell our listeners about that.
I did.
That's crazy.
You know, the older I get, the fewer there are of us that can actually say that.
But the protégés.
but conductors of my generation, that was the thing. The few dozen of us that had the opportunity. So this was up in Tanglewood in Massachusetts. For those who are musically inclined, may know that that's the summer home of the Boston Symphony. The symphony spends the summer there, and they have a summer institute for young musicians. They have a young musician orchestra, the Berkshire Orchestra, and a very, very famous program for young conductors, where they choose 2, 3, at most 4 conducting fellows each summer. Wow. And in fact, Bernstein went through that program. He was in the very first class, very first year. He studied with Serge Koussevitzky. And then years later, he would come back and teach, and that was my lucky moment in 1983. I was 24 years old,
his reputation had preceded himself, obviously, because this was decades after. Now well, we're in the 80s, you know, so that, he's a legend at this point.
Well, by that time, yeah, he's in his 60s, yeah. And he's a legend at that point. So there were like 160 some of us applying for those three fellowships that year, and auditions and crazy stuff, and so I was very lucky to be chosen, and it was a great summer, and it was one of the greatest experiences. Was we actually conducted on the same concert together, where he conducted half of the concert and the three of us conducted the other half of the concert.
What was the concert? What was the piece?
Do I know?
Let's bring it on.
It's etched in my memory.
Share with us.
Yeah, I was 24 years old. This was in the Tanglewood Shed, which seats 5,000. Another umpteen thousand on the lawn,
sure.
And there I was, the kid. Obviously everybody came to see Bernstein, but we each got to conduct a short piece. Mine was piece Ravel Alborada del Grazioso. It's a nice Ravel piece. But Bernstein conducted some Berlioz and Le Bouffe sur le Toit, another composition he conducted.
Awesome.
Mio. It was an all French yeah. music program, but anyway, so we had the umpteen thousand people there, or maybe even more than that, and he was crazy in so many wonderful ways, and the older he got, the more it got that way, in that he had what we would today call no filters.
Yeah, exactly. Hashtag no filters.
Just whatever was in his brain came out at that moment, regardless. Totally didn't matter to him what you thought of him, it was just there. And I tell you, for a conductor, it happens to be a wonderful quality, because conductors are put in a position where you're put in front of 100 musicians or so, who all play their instruments extraordinarily well, sure. And now it's your job to instruct them what to do. So unless you have some, unless you're a little bit humble about it, and also have no pretenses and are just, aren't hiding anything, aren't trying to put anything over anyone. That's what it is.
Right.
You just have to be yourself. And he was himself all the time, to the max.
That is so great. See, I liked hearing this personal side, the personal side to him. That's great. What about musically? Do you think you learned from him? How did that evolve your career, like musically, after, you're one person going in and meeting him, and then afterwards?
Well, of course. I mean, there are people who have impact that stays with you the rest of your life. And but that's, that is actually part of the music, is just being completely in the music all the time and completely given over to the music all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Did he ever talk about the On the Waterfront at all?
No, we didn't talk about On the Waterfront.
Ah, dang it. It's okay. What else? Explain. I know we've done concerts like this before, or pieces about him, where a lot of it's the NSO. We'll do it at, let's say, with Stephen Reinecke at the Kennedy Center, or with Emile Decoux at Wolf Trap. We know he's a good friend now. Since you're going to be doing this, talk about sort of the challenges that you have to be up there. I think they described it almost like Guitar Hero. You have to hit a certain beat with a little visual sensor going across your screen, or how are you actually conducting it live? How are you matching it to the picture?
That's exactly what you're describing. Yeah. Is exactly right. I mean, first of all, people want to know, well, wait a second, what happens? There's music in the movie. Right. No. They're able to separate that track out.
So we're only hearing the dialogue and
sound
effects.
So you're hearing the dialogue and sound effect, except, big secret here now to the WTOP audience.
Oh, yeah, let's go exclusive.
There are actually three very short snippets of music that are going to come with a soundtrack.
Okay.
One of them was not composed by Bernstein, and some dance music. Okay. One of them is actually Bernstein playing the piano himself.
Wow. So you're like, let's.
So
leave
they
that
decided
in there.
To let's keep that. Yeah. And another one is a snippet of church organ.
Sure,
but anyway, but yeah, the Bernstein playing piano himself is kind of fun to hear. But yes, so there's exactly what you described. So then there's electronics, aids created that make it possible for a conductor to then take that and put the music exactly where it belongs. And it's, yes, watching like an iPad screen with flags going across and timing it to it.
That's crazy. And if you've never done one of these concerts, like as an audience member, I just absolutely implore you to do it because it's so much fun. It allows you, yeah, you'll get sucked into the movie. So make sure you take minutes to like be going, you know, looking down and just kind of taking in the experience to watch the orchestra as the movie's going on. It's almost, I mean, we do it when we read subtitles in movies. You can do it. Look up and down. It blows me away. It reminds you the power of the music in the movie.
Like, well, if you strip it away. That's something that people don't realize. I mean, people that like go to movies and cry, and yeah. I do this. I'm terrible.
Of course. He's crying right now. No.
They don't realize it's actually the soundtrack underneath that gets you to that point.
Yep.
If you were to take out the soundtrack, you don't get there.
Exactly.
So it's the music that makes it happen. And frankly, it's us musicians who kind of hold the key, and you know, we kind of know what it is. I mean, it's a timing of things. It's we have some magic here, magic dust that we throw on this. But in any case, this score in particular is really interesting because there's like a dance band that we do, and there's like I said, the percussive effects, and it's a really cool score to listen to and kind of watch a little bit, see how it's done.
And how many members are in the orchestra?
So for this concert, I'm thinking it's between 60 and 70.
Okay. God, it's going to be...
We have accordion. I mean, it's just stuff you don't think of.
And all the instruments you mentioned, like the saxophone and the horn and the percussion. It's going
to
be so
good.
Is there a piece of the score that that when you're up there, that is there like an underrated or personal favorite part of this score when the movie's unfolding that you personally just love every time?
Yes.
A certain section of the movie.
Yes. Well, there's that, and also a favorite place... in the movie, of course. Well, so the favorite place in the movie, of course, the famous line, which actually does have music under it.
Sure.
So I get
people
to
forget that. Yeah.
So I get to conduct that music, and there's a little bit of a timing thing right after he says that line. Right. The music kind of goes in a certain direction. So that's kind of interesting. But no, what Bernstein does is he writes themes for various characters and sort of for various aspects of the film,
like leitmotifs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, good for you. Yeah.
I'm trying, man.
Leitmotifs. So then later on, like towards the end of the film, he kind of superimposes them as things come together.
Right.
And then in the very final scene, there's this march to the end, which kind of builds triumphantly.
To the end credits.
It's very moving. I mean, that's the place.
Yeah, we don't want to give it away, but
in the film,
you've all seen it, but it's so good.
Yeah. So anyway, I loved it. I'll have so much fun.
Awesome. Well, this was great. Thanks for joining us and coming in. We can't wait. I love these events. These live movie concerts with orchestras are my secret favorite thing to do around. Well, not even secret. Go, everyone, come do it. I love it. It's my favorite tradition around town. So I just hope they keep them going. Anything in closing? If our listeners have heard this, why should they come out? It's in Strathmore, beautiful space. Why should they come out to this?
It's in Strathmore. Obviously, it's one of the best films of all time on a very large screen. It's remastered and the music is live, and if you've heard that sort of thing before, you know what it is, so you want to come back. If you've never heard it before that way, you owe it to yourself. It's the greatest score. It's the greatest experience.
Awesome. Well, again, it is On the Waterfront, Leonard Bernstein's legendary score, on Saturday, September 29th, 8 p.m. at Strathmore. Maestro.
Are we supposed to be saying National Philharmonic?
NationalPhilharmonic.org? Yeah, let's say, where can we find more information?
Yeah. NationalPhilharmonic.org is the best place.
And then after this, or even before that, keep checking out all the other Philharmonic events throughout the year.
Very good.
This will maybe bring in some movie fans, and then they'll be Philharmonic fans.
Yeah, they can get into the music, and then we have lots more coming. A couple weeks later, we have another wonderful concert. So Shostakovich and all kinds of stuff.
Awesome. Can't wait. September 29th at Strathmore. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.